You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
As an investor, the Fed and the trajectory of US interest rates is so important in framing your top-down view. And I watched Jerome Powell's congressional testimony last night and found it fascinating for several reasons. Kobi Lakranji, co-founder of Rexalom Invest, not sure if you got to watch it all the way in the Kruger. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you, Mike. And thanks for all the work you've done at Classic Business. It's been an absolute pleasure to be part of the show And it's been an absolute privilege.
Kobi, you're letting the cat out the bag. This is the last time we'll be doing the real economy under the Classic Business banner, at least, because I'll be starting my new much truncated show on Hot starting on the 1st of July. We're not going to be broadcasting on the 30th at all, as the changeover will be underway. So no Classic Business next Wednesday. This is our last chat of the real economy in Classic Business. It's a rather bittersweet occasion, and I think a fitting occasion because we've discussed it so often in the past. The Fed and the Fed watching that we do, the dot plots and all of that. Now, you know, watching Powell's testimony, I was amazed at how politicized it was. We had Republicans pushing this consistent message that the Democrats are making the Fed's mandate of full employment and price stability impossible because they reckon that unemployment benefits are actually stopping people from getting back to work. And that the continuation of this fiscal stimulus is resulting in a weaker dollar and above target inflation, which is hurting the average American. And the Dems are blaming the Republicans for how COVID was handled initially and saying that the return on vaccination and stimulus will be clear over time. So there was a clear political flavor to what was going on.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, the crisis that is underway in the world economy, it's not just about the American economy, but it really is about the world economy, is one that will spill over into the political landscape. So, yes, there's supposed to be this defining line between central banks and what happens in the political, from a political perspective. But the crisis that we're dealing with is of such a significance that that you can expect some of those things to kind of spill over. And let's face it, that from a monetary perspective, many central banks across the world have done what they can in order to ensure that there's liquidity and enough liquidity in the world economy to ensure that there's a smooth running of the world system, so to speak. And I think that we should take our hats off to people like the ECB and like the Federal Reserve, just to ensure that during the COVID crisis last year, that they actually just created the monetary base to ensure that the world economy can continue to operate. If that wasn't the case, Mike, we would be in a very, very different world today, and we would be having very, very different conversations to the one that we're having tonight.
Yeah.
The thing that's got the market split, though, and the thing that everybody is talking about at the moment is, now that we are post the crisis, we're kind of standing on the other side of the crisis and we're looking back, many people are saying, but, you know, could it not have been better? You know, couldn't we have done something more? And what about the unemployment benefits? And what about the fiscal stimulus that potentially is going to be coming on board? And isn't that too much? And it's a very nice conversation to be having from an academic perspective. But actually, it's a privilege to have that conversation because we're not sitting in crisis mode anymore, you know?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more in terms of the fact that the policy response was commensurate with the size of the crisis. And we saw an increase in money supply, M1 money supply of 25% last year in the US. Many people now worried about inflation on the back of that. But I would much rather that we had inflation after that record level of money printing and stimulus than talk of deflation. To say, look, I mean, we've thrown everything that we can at the problem and we still can't stimulate inflation. So I must say that I actually found the message on inflation reassuring. And we saw last night's price action certainly suggesting that I'm not alone.
Yeah. I mean, look, the inflation number that one is seeing at the moment, that 5% number, is really a year-on-year number. And the fact is that we came from an incredibly low base 12 months ago because of the COVID crisis. And one is just literally seeing a rebound in the numbers where they are at the moment. What is telling, though, is what is happening in the bond market. So if you look at U.S. yields, last week was a very interesting time to watch U.S. yields. U.S. 10-year yield went from 1.62%. This is now at its high point. And it fell as low as 1.37% during last week to to kind of be where it is at the moment at about 1.5%. So you're seeing the long end of the curve, you're seeing the yields coming down, but on the short end of the curve, you're seeing US two-year yields going from 15 basis points to 24 basis points, indicating exactly what Powell is saying. He's saying, listen, we're going to be putting up rates. We you know, and this is going to be happening in 2023, and we probably put it up about two times during 2023. And maybe even before that, you know, that certainly could be the case. But the long-term yields are telling you, listen, this inflation is probably a transitory number. It's a number that's probably going to work its way through the system quite quickly, because growth is going to be a problem if one looks towards the longer or the mid to longer term.
Mm. And within that, I actually found the comments on the labor market most interesting, because they're currently around 9 million job vacancies in the US. I mean, that's a massive number. And the thing is, you know, these posts are not being filled because people are either they're scared of COVID, or they're living with people that are vulnerable, so they don't want to go out. Or it's unemployment benefits acting as a disincentive. And I think that's a big one, because if you look at current state unemployment plus the federal enhancement program, it means that if you're a U.S. citizen, you're currently being paid somewhere in the region of $37,000 a year to sit on the sofa. And it's no wonder that airlines and restaurants are struggling to fill vacancies. People are just not incentivized to go out and work, yeah.
And I mean, look, the Americans work quite differently to the South Africans, in the sense that, you know, in South Africa, we're used to people choosing a career, and then you kind of get yourself involved in the career and you work. But in America, it's quite different. If you're not in a specific professional silo, so to speak, you can hop around jobs. You could be in the restaurant industry, for instance, and then you could potentially get yourself into the catering industry, or maybe you want to do something else in the travel and leisure industry. And the job market is so flexible that you're able to do this kind of thing. And this is exactly what they're talking about at the moment, is that a lot of these folk are sitting and actually getting themselves unemployment checks at this stage, and they should really be back in the workforce. And all of this is obviously a burden on the state. But a much bigger burden on the state is if one looks at productivity numbers relative to long-term employment numbers in the United States. There certainly is evidence of decent productivity, but if one looks at the way in which we work and the type of work that we do and the type of work that has been taken over by machines and by IT and just by us being a lot more efficient in what we're doing, it means that the labor force isn't necessarily skilled in order to deal with a very, very changing world. That's the one factor of this. And the other factor of this, or the factor to take into consideration, is the percentage labor force participation rate. And this is just an evidence of the baby boomers retiring, and there's less and less folk working in the world economy, and there's more and more burden on kind of the retired spectrum of your total employment base. So all of this feeds into the world, or shall I rather say into the US economy, and exasperates a lot of what you're seeing busy happening at the moment. And as a matter of fact, it's not just in the US, quite frankly, it's in Europe as well.
That's all over. And Powell reckons that I think 15 million Americans are going to see benefits disappear or decrease in the short term. And his base case is that you see serious job creation in the fall, because you don't have this incentive to remain rooted to the couch. You're now going to go and look for work. And there is work available in the U.S. economy. But there's also, on the flip side of that, a lot of speculation that the Democrats, being the Democrats, is that going to try and extend the benefits? And if they do, no doubt people are going to sit on the couch for a bit longer, and that probably means we'll see a more accommodative environment for a bit longer as well, which then feeds into the US interest rate outlook, which obviously feeds into every asset class in the world and why it's so important and why we love talking about it. Kobi Lekhrunji, co-founder of Rexalom Invest, thank you so much for all the insights and all the great quips you've given us over the years here on Classic Business. Look forward to having you on Hot Business in the not-too-distant future. Take care.
Thanks, Mark. Thank you.